This episode of the Ottawa Entrepreneurs Podcast is brought to you by Extension Marketing, the marketing agency that specializes in unique needs and budgets of small to medium-sized businesses. They provide turnkey marketing solutions that get results. You can find out more today at extensionmarketing.com. Now here's your host, Pat Whalen.
Thanks, Veronica, for taking the time today to come on the show. Really appreciate it.
Absolutely.
Let's start off, Veronica, share your story with our listeners, please. Tell us a bit about your background and maybe some of the projects that you've worked on and are currently working on.
Well, I started in theater and I went into film video in my 20s, and I did a film degree out in Alberta and at the Southern Alberta Institute of Technology. And that was a pretty intense program to get into at the time. So I was very proud to actually even get into that. And then after that, it kind of split into where I traveled a little bit. And my career in film video has been very diverse. It's been I've worn a lot of production hats, and it just continues to surprise me. I've gone to some places that I never imagined for myself, and it's just all been a really, really great journey. I've gotten to witness a lot of different industries through, you know, capturing them. So. Including government. So it's definitely been, you're kind of in an audience seat. This is why it's a strange position to be in the guest spot, because usually I'm on the behind the scenes, and so it's kind of a neat sensation to be here with you and doing this podcast, because I never get this spot.
You're always looking through the lens. Yeah, video production and that whole area, is that something you always had an interest in? Like, did you know at a pretty early age that's something you wanted to do? Or kind of take us through that. What led you to that?
Yeah, no. I was always a writer at heart first. I kind of like, I did that more for love than anything. Video came really late, and it was my later 20s, and I had a real resistance to the camera. I failed my first camera exam, and I burst into tears in that exam, surprising both me and the instructor. So it's like, yeah, the camera was it was like one of those what you resist persists things. And so eventually I did end up investing in camera gear, but it was a jump, because that wasn't actually my specialty in school. I was in the writer-producer stream, whereas video operation, that's very its own craft technical element. So, but I think it's good whether you're on one side or the other to understand both. Video production came really much later, and I have enjoyed it. I've gotten over the camera. But it isn't intimidating. I think for a lot of people, even when you see professional cameras today, it's like, whoa, you know. I've really enjoyed all the aspects of production, really.
And when you first started doing this, were you working for someone else? And before you kind of went off on your own, is that how you, was it an apprentice situation, or what did that look like?
I guess out of film school, I was lucky enough to, I was one of the better producers in our class. So I had the opportunity to produce with Country Music Television. That was a really great gig. And then, as it usually starts in that industry, it's like one gig feeds the other. I don't even know what I was saying.
Well, okay, let's talk a bit about your freelance journey, okay? Because I think a lot of our listeners are entrepreneurs, and in that particular realm of things, they're potentially doing freelance work as maybe as a way to get started, or maybe as a way full time. So, can you take us a bit through that, through your freelance journey, and what that looked like?
Well, for me, it was a clear, if I have the gear, I'm going to work. That's what my thought was at the time, and that proved to be true. I invested, it was scary, but I invested in a camera package and an edit suite, and went through all the struggles and learning curves that involve that. Now, though, like, that was back in 2008 that I bought that first camera selection, and yeah, now that I look back, like it's changed so much. Like people are shooting on their phones, and audio gear doesn't cost $800 for a set of lavs. You would never pay that anymore. Like not at a non-broadcast level. Everybody's a filmmaker, it seems, and or has this joy of storytelling that way. So, you're increasingly in this world where it becomes like, do I just do this with my phone or do I invest? And I know my son's generation was in who's just graduated Algonquin in film video. I gave him my old camera setup just to keep him encouraged and stuff. And but it is daunting. It's not an easy world out there. But I guess what I would say to somebody who is starting in the freelance world is that if you want to work, you'll work. Like it's like I've always held true to that. It's like you might not always work for money, but and I know that's a really hard thing to hear, but the truth is the best gigs that I've gotten, I offered, I ended up doing a lot of private client work and working with entrepreneurs and getting their messages out there. And I know that with one particular incident, I did a highlights reel for a speaker. And that turned into, and I did it for free. I didn't ask her. I asked her if I could shoot her performance, or her speak, sorry. But yeah, it came from me delivering, me over-delivering. And then she was like, whoa, I actually paid someone a couple thousand dollars to do this, and they didn't do this at the same level that you gave to me. So I ended up getting probably 18 months of work off of that freebie. So and I'm not going to say that doesn't always happen. I mean, sometimes you can, and you have to be careful. You can be taken advantage of for sure. But people who genuinely need those kind of services are in a different class than just doing favors for people too. Like you have to kind of keep your ear to the ground and networking events. And like for me as a videographer in that time, photographers were a real asset because they were getting booked for things, and knowing how to communicate with them and being able to work well with them was key. Because like for a photographer, it's very annoying to have a videographer not know their place, and vice versa. Like the two are mutual, but like I can edit out a photographer, whereas like if I blow a shot, they have one frame in 24 seconds and I have 24. So I don't know. It's just it. I think it's scary out there a little bit. We are hearing things about AI replacing everybody, and it's true for the film video world. I mean, I think we're going to enter a really crazy, exciting time, but everyone's holding their breath a little bit, because it means, I think, like, and that's not just film video, the health community, every community is going to be affected by these streamlines. I just had a chat with someone I used to work with my old director in government, and AI is replacing things in government, like translators. And it's scary, right? Like, it's like you think of what that was even, 5 years ago, and now you've got like a headpiece, like an earpiece telling you what the translation is in real time. So we're definitely coming up against technology. It's going to be interesting to see. We're not in boring times, that's for sure.
And it's interesting we're having this conversation because this is now a very common conversation for me, both professionally and personally, with the impact of AI and all of that. But and I'm fairly versed on this, and I don't know if it's the doomsday scenario that everyone is saying. It's going to replace jobs, 100% it is, but so did a lot of things. ATM machines replaced bank tellers in the day. I'm old enough to remember when you pull up to a gas station and people actually put gas in your car for you. So we've been through some of the the factory workers being replaced by robotic elements. So we've been through these revolutions or revolutions before. I just don't know the impact it's going to have yet. It will be significant, but I also think it's an opportunity for people to get out into the forefront of this and study it, learn it, and because there's always going to be a strategic element to anything AI, and what you put into it is what you get out of it, and that's going to be a key thing going forward. But I don't want to talk about AI the whole podcast, but it's becoming a very common
Yeah,
theme
it's
on the
really
podcast.
relevant.
It's coming up more and more because people are concerned about it for sure. you and I've known each other for years, and I know, I believe at one point you were doing freelance work, but then you did you have a studio, or were you renting a studio with someone else? And walk us through that a little bit, what that was like to transition from being just in the field to having your own setup.
Yeah, I did that. I did have a studio for a couple of years. I shared with a photographer. Again, I feel like that was a natural match. We shared the space in the glebe. It was she had already had the space, and I came to see her, and I saw this like sort of unused office space, and so I kind of made her this deal where I would pay her rent for that space, because I did believe in, showing up to a space and showing people a space is very valuable. I know we're all working from home, and that has its own place, but in a photography, videography stage, people feel really comfortable coming in and seeing what is there. And so that was beneficial at the time. It had its caveats though, because it made it hard. Like I would have to edit there, and that was really frustrating, because like you didn't always, like sometimes you edit late into the night, and that was a bit of a, so it had its pluses and minuses. I enjoyed it at the time, because it felt kind of good to be going into a studio. But again, today, whether or not that's relevant, like everybody is like a mobile unit at this point. They have their MacBook Pro set up, and they're, editing some, like I know that I've gone out and I've edited on set on the spot. I mean, that's not ideal, but it's definitely something we're capable of.
Can you
So
tell our listeners a little bit what it's like? Entrepreneurship by its nature is very lonely. I would think being a freelance entrepreneur is that must be tough, because you really don't have anyone to bounce things off of. Or if you're struggling, what do you do with that? Like, how do you approach that? Do you mind sharing with us a little bit about that? Like, what that's
yeah.
like, and how maybe some things that you've learned that'll help our listeners that are doing freelance work that may be struggling, and what advice would you give to that person?
What would I tell someone struggling? I think, your network is important, and I think that, like you said, it is oftentimes a one woman show sort of scene. In my case, one woman show, but I've taken real value in the people I've met over the years, and on set or otherwise, like-mindedness. I'm part of an arts guild. It's like there are ways to kind of keep it from feeling that way. Recently, I've partnered up with another couple of guys also, and we formed this kind of company. We haven't released the website yet, but the idea is to have this sort of creative means for the three of us with our connections to kind of show up and have a full crew scene. So, it's so tailored too, though. It really depends, like, are you shooting commercial? Are you shooting wedding? Are you shooting film, independent film? That's a whole world unto itself now. It's one I'm actually kind of getting my teeth into, and I have been trying over the years. It's really daunting, but and it's really a case of like, what are you doing this for? Because if you're like, I don't know, if you're doing it to pay an income, first and foremost, yeah, I don't know. It might be a mix of things. I've thrived best when I've had a diversity of different kinds of projects going. Right now I'm in the struggle of building an online presence with this novella and The Incomplete Artist. And I don't know, somewhere I think I had like a magical idea that this would just like people would just want to read this. And it's really not the case at all. And then you become like the publicist, you become the, I have to build the landing page, like there's all these, you just never done learning. That's what I'm learning, is you're just never done. There's never any stop to that, which is good, but sometimes it's nice to just sit on your laurels too.
Listen, let's get into the novella, but at first I want to make a comment. I want to make sure I've heard you correctly. There's two things you've really said throughout this throughout this interview where we've talked about, you said there's always business out there if you're willing to go and look for it. Sometimes have to volunteer, and you've mentioned networking, and really, you're talking about a form of selling here, right? That if you believe in what it is you're doing, then you're almost doing people a disservice by not offering up your services. So I think that's where a lot of entrepreneurs of any kind get stuck. Is and you've touched on a little bit with your book, but is that people assume that you're just going to open up your doors and people are just going to come marching in. Sometimes, either you got to do marketing or you've got to go out and talk to people and you've got to meet people and you, whether virtually or in person or whatever that looks like in today's world or in depending on your industry, whatever that industry is, your best way to connect with people. But I find too many entrepreneurs that I talk to, Veronica, are really they don't think that's part of the process when in fact it is the process that if everything starts with that. So, you've been doing this for a number of years now, and would you agree with that statement that unless you're willing to get out there,
Yeah,
maybe it's not for
I
you?
think I think you taught me that more than anybody. I remember you saying, like, what's the most important position within your company? And it was sales.
Yeah.
So it doesn't matter if you have like a videographer or if you have a producer or whatever. If there's no sales, if there's no sales point at some point, and if you're not good at it, good at doing that, then I think it's in your best interest to team up with somebody who is.
Yeah.
Because I think that's a lot of the issue too with a lot of these super ultra talented people is that maybe they fall short socially or they're awkward. They're not going to make the sale. And that's tough. And that's where, network becomes really important, or, the proof is in the portfolio or whatever. But yeah, you gotta think outside the box in a lot of scenarios. Like it's like you have to see what's you have to open your eyes and see what's. But if you're sitting in your bricks and mortar building waiting for someone to come in and ask for your services, you're dreaming. It's like it's really a case of time and pressure. If anything, I've learned like you if you spend the time and the energy, if you're not just spending the time and the energy complaining about it not working, because if you're actually spending like time and energy on strategy and on rollout and on rolling out a bunch of content that might have cost you, right? Like it might it, whether it cost you time or money, I know for me, time has been like the big price. Like it's the time to do all these things and wear all these hats, and I guess it can feel exhausting, but then you can always go work for somebody else,
Yeah.
if
Yeah.
you're not an assistant, you are one, right? Like
Yeah. Well, it's interesting you say that because again, a common theme, it seems to be every week now that a lot of my guests are that's what they're commenting to me is that, hey, listen, not everyone's cut out for this. And that's okay. There's nothing wrong with that, and we're not trying to discourage entrepreneurship. We're doing the exact opposite on this show. But I also think it's important that the listener or the viewer recognizes whether or not this is for them or not. Let's talk more about your book.
Yeah, that's fun.
Yeah.
Yeah, so the novella, I'll call it a novella because it's shorter in length. It's more like in the 57 page mark than a full-fledged book. I wrote it because I was let go of government. I was kind of hired in the pandemic silo, and I was 3 years there at Global Affairs, and I had a very interesting job. Got to work with the Foreign Affairs Minister and Minister of Economic Development, top level people, and getting that inside view that wasn't, filtered through the news was really great for me because I had so little faith in the whole thing. But you do see people up close, and you realize, okay, like people are really trying to just do their jobs. I know politics is complicated and long, but that was a really great window for me. So when it kind of ended, I was like, I really want to do something that is mine. So I'd had all these pieces of writing everywhere, and I'm just like, I need to, at some point, it can't be about other people's projects. At some point, it has to be about mine. And I think, I'm early in my 50s, and I think that was a real switch for me. Like, it's got to be about what you want at some point, right? So that's what The Incomplete Artist was for me. It was a way to entertain and use some of these stories that had opened my mind to different things. And my idea with that, it's not just that one novella, it's like eight. So I'm working on other ones. But again, it can be a case of like, how do you put a paycheck together, right? Because it's like that takes a lot of time, but maybe on the back end it will earn money. But I don't think, again, that that has to be that can be the approach initially. Because if you make it just about money, then it's like there's something that falls flat with that.
Yeah,
So
and
people
sometimes
want
it's
to be
project.
inspired. If you're desperate, people smell it. Like even as a freelancer, if you're desperate, it's obvious. So you have to find this sweet spot of not being desperate, you know, or at least not showing that you really need this, or you know, you have to play the game a little bit. People don't want to latch on to something that's sinking. So the novella thing has been really interesting because I've always seen, you know, you see people build businesses online, and I was hoping to get into that stream of income where it's like passive. It's not passive. It's not passive at all.
Yeah.
It's very active. So but it's just a yeah, and it's a learning experience. I never thought I would go the TikTok route, but now I'm looking at TikTok, and you know, you resist all these new things, but if you don't take it up, I think that you miss out on what that platform potentially has for you that you might not have thought of. It's just
Was it hard for you to write the novella? Did it?
yeah, I mean it took a lot longer. I scheduled it kind of over a few months, and it took the better part of a year. You know, it went through drafts. I think it went through 15 drafts or something. It was, and then it went through copy editors, a couple of copy editors, and then yeah, it kind of grew. It became its own life form, and now I'm doing the audiobook for it, which is fun. It's like these are fun projects, but eventually the dream is that the fun projects pay the bills too.
But
Yeah,
you gave a great example earlier where you did freelance work for somebody, you didn't charge them, and that opened up all kinds of doors. So who knows? It's you know, it's that you've made some really good points about, yes, we all have to make money, of course we do. But if that's all you're thinking about when in any form of entrepreneurship, I think you're going to fail.
me
I
too.
think if you provide a good service and you care about the people that you're doing work for and the people that you're working with, that the money flows from that, not magically or anything. You have to have systems and processes in place. And I get all that, sales, marketing, operations, finance. I understand all that. But I think if I find too many people I talk to, it's just, well, I just want to make this much money. I said, well, hang on, that's fine. And you can get there. But what are you providing? And
Yeah.
is that service worth that amount of money? And if it's not, then you're not going to get there. Like you got to reverse engineer this thing. So who knows? You know, the book you've written, who knows what doors it's going to open. It would be fun to do a part two of this podcast in a year or two and share with our listeners. Okay, here's all the doors that opened up as a result of that. Listen, we're out of time, believe it or not, but before we let you go, where can our listeners or viewers find out more about your services and where can they find out about the book as well?
So www.incompleteartist.com would be that. And then for my services, I guess it would be my name on LinkedIn. I don't have my own website for my freelance work. I'm doing more unit photography these days, which is like behind the scenes type stuff. And recordings as well. Recording interviews is always a good thing, but yeah, it's yeah, just those two spots. LinkedIn is like one of the good networking places for me, anyway.
And I've had the pleasure of reading the book, and I can highly recommend it to anyone that's listening or watching. It's a really great read. Thanks, Veronica, for doing this. Really appreciate your time today.
Yeah, thanks so much, Faz. So nice to see you. I'm glad I got to do this too.
If your company or organization is looking to improve your marketing, go to the Extension Marketing website at extensionmarketing.com and book a discovery call today.